And on the line now, I have Conall Foley, Director of Strategy. Good morning to you, Conall.
Good morning. How are you?
I'll tell you, anybody going to be listening to us now or want to see in the news and stuff like that, in this day and age, in the 21st century, it's hard to believe there's so much hunger in the world. So tell us, 47 countries in particular, but why is all this happening?
Well, you're right. It's an absolute scandal that there's so many people hungry in the world. There are a lot of reasons for it. I mean, the key drivers probably are conflict, which is the one that we highlight this year in Concern's Global Hunger Index report. And conflict is a huge driver of hunger. But climate change, and you know, we had the COP in Glasgow this weekend. Climate change is also a driver, and COVID, things like COVID. But they're the big drivers of hunger. And you're right, it's a scandal that there's so many people hungry in the world. What's interesting, of course, is that we've actually been doing well globally since about 2000 till about 2016. And it's really recently that things have been, we're a bit dangerously off track again in the fight towards hunger. And it's exactly for those reasons of conflict and climate change.
And it's mainly governments are really the only people, or the public themselves. How can anybody assist in all this? As I say, I'm sure a lot of people looking at it think, no, I think this is all exaggerated. Look, they do, I suppose, with climate change as well. Disbelief.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's data that backs this up. I mean, it's just not a figment of anybody's imagination. You know, we can prove that people are going hungry, and it's a terrible thing. What people can do about it, well, you know, it's, as I said, what you do about conflict is very difficult. I mean, that's really up to governments and people to try and solve conflict. But I do think that actually the public should be saying it's a scandal that wars are breaking out, and they should be demanding of the governments that they really try to solve some of those conflicts. As we, you know, as we saw in Northern Ireland, we all thought Northern Ireland wouldn't be fixed, and it took a lot of governments and a lot of them peace building to bring that about. So they can do that. They can also be supporting agencies. I mean, I think you heard this morning another radio station, you know, the World Food Programme in Afghanistan, saying that they're trying to feed half of the Afghan population this year. So people, of course, can donate to agencies like Concern, who are actually trying to fight hunger every day. But also, you know, I mean, it's fantastic to look at young people's passion over climate change, for example, and climate change is a driver of hunger. So again, you know, addressing the climate change issue is something that will help solve the fight against hunger also over time. So people shouldn't be despondent, but they should be active, and they should try to be active citizens in trying to change the world, as young people are so idealistic and passionate about, and I think we should all be doing the same.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd imagine that with the internet there now, and like the world becoming a global village and people able to see things, that things would have been better. But why is global security sort of on the decline?
Well, you know, the conflict, as you know, is very, very, very complex. And, you know, while wars between countries have reduced, wars within countries have increased probably in the last 50 years. And, you know, they're complex. I mean, if you look at things like Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all of those, you know, they're ideologically driven things. And so you've got, you know, governments, poor governments often, who are trying to put money into fighting hunger, and then suddenly you've got this insurrection, and they're having to put money against fighting those insurrections as well. So, you know, they're very complex areas, and governments really struggle to be able to provide direct services while they've got all these people trying to undermine them, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not an easy one to deal with, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, within the, when you see the capitalism and stuff like that, and the way the ill division of wealth in the Western countries as well, which breeds a lot of the people that get into these organisations when they spread out.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, Concern believes that one of the drivers of extreme poverty and hunger is inequality. And you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what plays into the hands. I mean, we've heard plenty of stories in our countries where you'll have some of these terrorist groups, or like Boko Haram in Nigeria, or Al-Shabaab or places in Somalia, who would basically go to young, disaffected, unemployed people and say, "We'll give you loans to set up businesses." So of course they drug them in, as like drug gangs in Dublin do. You know, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. They find a young guy who doesn't have work and says, "Here, I'll give you a fiver to do this." So, you know, all those things happen. Absolutely.
Okay, so it's really your governments across the board, the mainstay of keeping this going, and I suppose it's up to people to get out there and protest in some ways. I mean, when you're talking about, say, a global warming, and you talk about the pandemic as it is in the moment and stuff like that, it exacerbates the situation. But we're talking about hunger in the world. I mean, if people that probably listen to the program can go back to the 60s, 70s and 80s, and especially the 80s with the what Bob Geldof did.
That's right.
And stuff like that. So it sort of resonates with the past all the time, and people find it hard to believe.
Yeah, they do find it hard to believe. And what's really interesting is, like, we, like people like in concern, if I'm thinking about where Bob Geldof, you know, where he raised the money for in Ethiopia and that Amhara region in northern Ethiopia, you know, we have found technical solutions to those drought-driven crises. You know, we do brilliant climate-smart agriculture, we do watershed management. We actually can actually solve a lot of the real environmental, the recurrent drought issues that happen that, you know, also make people hungry. You know, what we can't deal with, I think, is harder to deal with, are the conflict ones. So people shouldn't be despondent. Actually, agencies like Concern are actually dealing with things like recurrent drought. And we are adapting to climate change. We're supporting communities to adapt to climate change by helping them look at diversified crops, at more drought-tolerant crops, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we do have a lot of good technical solutions to some of the issues around things like climate change, or at least recurrent droughts. I mean, the issue about global warming and the future of the planet is a much bigger issue. But as I said, you know, we do have some solutions to some of those, and people should be supporting agencies like Concern, I think, to continue to do that, because they do keep food on people's table. And, you know, we certainly are effective, I think, in stopping a lot of people getting hungry on a day-to-day level.
And is it getting better? Because, I mean, isn't there hope that it'll be well improved by 2030? I know it's not on the same scale at all, but I do remember if related to Ireland back doing interviews in 2006, 2007, when there was very few people living on the streets, but people were saying the housing problem will be solved before 2010, and we're, God knows how much worse we are now. So is it realistic to say that this could be really solved in the next 10 years?
Well, I mean, that's one of the problems. That's one of the things that we're outlining in the Global Hunger Report, is to say that we're off track now. We were moving steadily towards zero hunger, slowly, since about, you know, the late 90s. But in the last 5 years now, we're really beginning to move off track again. And it is because of conflict and climate change and all those. So, you know, we have to deal with those issues at a global level. But it's like anything, as you say, with the housing crisis, you know, there are different drivers of them at different times. And it's up to government and having good government policies to try and fix those problems, to be honest with you. And that's why we, in Concern, do a lot of advocacy with governments to make sure that they have the right policies to address those underlying issues. Or you'll have the same problems keep turning up time and time again.
Yeah, talking about global security, I mean, people think that Europe is there for the past 30, 40 years, and they're saying, well, we shouldn't have that problem with global security. And some of the bigger nations should be getting more involved. And I mean, the fractious nature of some of the big countries now, like America, is frightening to an extent.
That is frightening. And, you know, the geopolitics is complex. And I think everybody knows that the issue of the veto at Security Council. I mean, in a way, you know, our expectation is that the UN Security Council should be the one that helps solve all of these global conflicts. But, you know, it's so complex with the big blocks of countries' interests and everything like that, and it's just proven very difficult to deal with. So again, a lot of people talk about trying to get UN Security Council reform. I mean, it's great that Ireland is on the Security Council at the moment and is doing some really good work in that Security Council. But again, it takes all of the nations in the world to try to agree that, and the bigger ones can be quite resistant to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just a continuing battle, to be honest with you. And we rely on our diplomats to try and solve those issues and help push things in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm just, unfortunately, I can be a bit pessimistic when I think about listening to the news this morning, and they're talking about vaccines and parts of Africa haven't even got the first one yet, and we're talking about boosters in the Western world and storing them in different places as well, and thousands of them lying somewhere. And it's sort of a bit depressing when you think about the hunger. If you go to the hunger then in 47 of the countries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we work in the poorest, what we call the fragile and conflict-affected states. And to be honest with you, what's interesting is listening to people about COVID. You know, when we asked people on the ground, you know, how is COVID impacting you, their initial response was saying, do you know what? We have so many problems and so many issues to deal with, and COVID is only just another one. And so it's kind of interesting that that was the original view. Now, clearly, we're worried about the rates going up in some of those countries. And you're back to what you mentioned earlier about global inequalities, or inequality being a driver of things. I mean, I think Mike Ryan, you heard him from WHO, the Irish Emergency Director in the World Health Organization, talking in I think it was the McGill Summer School earlier this week, and he was saying that he thought it was a disgrace that you had 2% of people vaccinated in developing countries, and frontline health workers in those countries not been vaccinated. Well, here we're talking about third jabs. So again, you're back to inequalities, and you know there is a whole movement called COVAX, which is trying to get vaccines to those developing countries. So again, I think we have to play our part in you know, sharing what we have.
Okay, Conal. Now, I suppose, like people, the charity is a big boost as well for all these conflicts and the hunger in the world. So, no matter how small it may be, people should keep with their contributions and help organizations.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we always say, look, what we're doing is humanitarian work. It's basically keeping people alive, regardless of what the political situation is in the country. So again, of course, people's donations are always absolutely incredibly important to us in terms of getting that work done and just, you know, delivering services to people on the ground when their own governments are struggling to do so.
And I suppose as well, it's the young people we rely on, and they're the ones that's rattling the drums quite a lot. And maybe if they get involved in politics a little bit more, we could have a better outcome in the future, make us more optimistic.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, I think we all struggle with the idealism we had when we were young, and we were all probably politically active and got involved in causes when we were young, and that's fantastic. And I think it's, you know, we should be trying to keep that into our middle age. The tricky bit from our point of view, from donations point of view, is that it's young people don't have disposable income and they're struggling themselves. So we rely on older people to give us money to be able to provide those services. But we do rely on young people to be the ones who are active and really agitating for political change, which is required.
Okay, can we put some optimism in there then, Conal, for the future of hunger of the world?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, the world has been moving in the right direction. It's only the last number of years, and it's really been driven by climate change and conflict. Now, you know, we do need the whole climate people to change their whole behaviours. I mean, we're talking about, you know, driving electric cars. We're talking about using less energy. We're talking about, you know, the government having strong policies, even though I know they're not very popular. But, I mean, we only have one planet. The people who are most affected by climate change are the people in developing countries because of these recurrent droughts and extremes of climate, like flooding, etc., etc. So I think if we can solve those, ultimately we will solve these issues. And we are all the time getting better and better at technically dealing with things like climate change in terms of adaptation on the ground. So, you know, let's keep optimistic, but also let's keep trying to change things.
Optimistic and realistic. And I suppose, like, the mindset that people have now as well, Conal, because of COVID, of helping each other and looking out for each other, that helps as well.
It absolutely does, and it was a fantastic renewed sense of community in Ireland, obviously, during COVID. But, you know, again, I think what's really interesting is, you know, we in Ireland have a social welfare system, which has been great. We look after the people who are probably struggling the most. But a lot of countries don't have those. And, you know, it's great now that over the last, again, 10 years, people like the World Bank and that are looking at supporting a lot of African countries to have welfare systems. Like, there was no dole in Africa, which is a real issue for the people at the bottom the whole time. But again, if you look at the amount of money set aside to deal with COVID, if we can do that for COVID, why can't we do it for some of these other issues like hunger?
Okay, as I say, we'll keep optimistic, Conal. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and let's keep optimistic. Thank you very much, Conal.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that's Director of Strategy, Conal Foley, there. And yes, let's be optimistic.